Let's talk about foundations. Foundations are so important, and as David expresses here in this psalm, it's just a great lesson for us to consider when difficult times come, what are we going to do? How strong and how firm is our foundation? And as we can imagine, and we may see those around us who struggle and even falter and collapse under the trials and stress of the world. But we don't have to. And David didn't have to. David, of all people, had trials. He had enemies galore, and they were after him from time to time. At times, he fled to the mountains and hid. Which is interesting, because if you remember in our psalm here, David even said, "Why should I flee like a bird to the mountains?" If you look again at Psalm 11, we're basically going to read through this. I want to make some applications for us this morning. So in Psalm 11, a psalm of David. "In the Lord I take refuge." I'm reading from the New American Standard, okay? But how can you say to my soul, "Flee as a bird to your mountain"? How can you tell me to fly to the mountain? Why should I flee like a scaredy cat to the mountains and hide? Look at his conditions. "For behold, the wicked have bent their bow. They make ready their arrow upon the string to shoot in darkness at the upright in heart." They're aimed at the upright of heart. They're aimed at the good. They're aimed at the godly. "If the foundations are destroyed, what can the righteous do? The Lord is in his holy temple. The Lord's throne is in heaven. His eyes behold, his eyelids test the sons of men. The Lord tests the righteous and the wicked. And the one who loves violence, his soul hates. Upon the wicked he will rain snares. Fire and brimstone and burning wind will be their portion of their cup." The reward for their actions is fire and brimstone, a burning wind. Verse 7, "For the Lord is righteous. He loves righteousness, and the upright will behold his face." The upright will see God. So let's look through this as we read through it. I kind of gave a little some thoughts as we read, but notice the psalm is a great psalm for us to think about as we go through trials and endure trials, and we have to ask ourselves, where are we in the end? Who am I? What's my purpose? Who am I loyal to? Who am I aligned with? And it brings all those things into question. Where is our foundation? Who is it we turn to? David trusting God and will not flee, which is interesting that David states this, because we know for a fact when Saul was after him, he did flee the mountains one of the times. When Absalom was trying to take over his kingdom, he fled from his house. He left and went to the mountains. And so is this David battling in his own mind what he should do, how he should, and you know we do that, don't we? Why should I do this? In the end, we may make a different conclusion. You know, he says, "You know, I trust in God. Why should I flee? And I will not flee." They're at times. So this may or may not be those specific cases when Absalom was after his kingdom, when King Saul was trying to kill him. This may or may not be them cases. Regardless, the point is that David did trust in God. The Psalms were full of that. He did put his trust in God, and I will not flee. His mantra, his mind, he told himself, even though he acted different at times, I'm not going to flee. Why should I run? Why should I fly? My foundation is in God. Why should I worry? Well, a reason to worry, because in this particular case, he describes an enemy that's in battle position. So they are set, in our world, we would say that the hammer is cocked, and their finger's on the trigger, and the weapon is pointed at you. For a bowsman, someone who shoots a bow, we have recurve, compound bows today, which take... you can have a 150-pound bow, but when you draw it all the way back, you're only holding about 10% of that. Very little weight. So a lot of let off. Well, the bows they had didn't have let off. It was full force. If it was a recurve or a long bow, which is just traditional stick and a string, you pulled it back, and as soon as you pulled it back, you let it go. because you have the full weight. And the longer you hold it, the more stressed you are, and then you start trembling and shaking. If you've ever done something heavy and try to sustain it, well, your aim's going to get off. Okay, so the idea is, if it says he's locked and loaded, basically. Verse 2 of Psalm 11, the bow is bent, it says, their arrow is on the string, and they're going to shoot in darkness at the upright of heart. So they're sitting there like this, aiming randomly. And he's saying, you know, why should I flee? Their arrows are aimed, they're about to let go. And if the foundations are destroyed, what can the righteous do? What can the righteous do? Our foundations, what we stand in, what our hope is built upon. There's so many songs we could sing about it, but what do we hope in? What do we stand firm in? When we have trials, when David had trials, where did he go? I'm about to die, but I trust in God. I will not flee. It's what he wants to do. That's what he believes and knows, even though he does at times act different upon that. Notice as well, his trust is in God. Well, what is it about God that we can trust in? Why does it matter that he trusts in God? God's not of this earth. There is not a, he is not bound by this earth. He's not of this world. He's independent. He's self-sustained. You know, he has existed from forever. And he will exist until forever. He's always been. He is not constrained by the things of this world. He's omniscient. He sees everything. And so especially in this case, David knows God sees what's going on. I'm not going to flee like a bird to the mountain. God knows. He's also all-powerful. Why am I to worry would be what David was thinking. God is not carnal. He's not physical like we are. He doesn't live within our realm like this. He doesn't have these difficulties. So in verse 4, he is in his holy temple. The Lord's throne, he reigns from heaven. His eyes behold, his eyes test the sons of men. He sees everything. There's nothing can skip by him. He knows. He's aware. And so David trusts and knows that God knows where he's at right now. You know, God's not taking a nap, and David might actually be in trouble when God's not watching. That's not God. He's always. He doesn't take naps. He's never far from us. He's never out of touch. He's never unaware. And that's to our benefit, right? If we're serving God. So God reigns from heaven. He is not carnal. And he judges the wicked. Okay, so we're talking about enemies of God and therefore of David, or vice versa, enemies of David as the anointed king or the reigning king, and therefore they would be enemies of God. Notice what it says about that in the end of verse 5 and 6. The Lord tests the righteous and the wicked. So the Lord's going to test us. Almighty God is going to put us to prove us. What's the proof of the one who loves violence? His soul hates that person. A person who loves violence, the wicked. God, it says, hates them. That's something we don't hear a lot today. We hear about God is love, but God does not like iniquity. And it's not that David didn't commit iniquity. So it's not just that it's iniquity. It's that one who revels in iniquity, one who enjoys iniquity, one who lives in it, thrives in it, and casts God away and said, I don't want you, God. That person is the enemy of God. That person that loves violence in spite of what God asks of him, his soul hates. And upon the wicked he will rain snares. You ever been in the I always think of the cat with a long tail in a room full of rocking chairs. There ain't no place for him to go. He's going to get rocked. That tail is just going to get run over everywhere. There is no way of escaping. It's raining snares. You're going to be captured everywhere. And I think, too, of the old mechanical traps that trappers used to use, the old metal traps that snap closed. Can you imagine walking around an old mouse trap? Can you imagine stepping around without shoes on in a room full of mouse traps? The snares are everywhere. It's going to hurt. There's no way of escaping it, right? And the fire and brimstone, a real ugly picture here about fire and brimstone, the heat and the anguish associated with that condition, the fallout from a volcano, all the lava spraying around. That's what that's talking about. And then the idea of the wind, a burning wind, will be the portion of the cup. This is a tempest. It's not just some breeze that we have or a derecho. This is a hurricane or tornado. These are huge. There's hurricanes down south, and maybe you have some up here too. I know at least around Oklahoma City happens, seems like every year just about. There'll be a Category 5 tornado that comes through and literally wipes the grass off the ground before it's done. That's God's judgment. That's the kind of judgment David's talking about here. And there's no escape. There's no hiding. There's no protection against that of the physical nature. But David trusts in God. God knows he is his refuge. He can help him. God blesses the righteous. So we're going to jump down. What about the righteous? We talked about the wicked, the one who's turned his face against God, the one who rejects God completely, says, I'm not going to have any part of this, God. I don't want you. And I'm not going to submit to you. Then you have the one who desires righteousness and seeks righteousness and performs righteousness. Notice this. So these are the allies of God. These are the ones who want to do what's right, wants to follow God. God is righteous, verse 7, for the Lord is righteous. He loves righteousness, and the upright will behold his face. The upright will see him face to face. The upright will be in his presence. The idea is being blessed. To being in if you can imagine some great man or woman in our nation to be actually in their presence, to shake their hand and spend time with them and talk to them, a great privilege it would be, and that's our privilege was offered with those with God. He is righteous, he loved righteousness, and the righteous will behold his face, or the upright will behold his face. So God blesses the righteous. And so let's back up now in verse 5a and then 7. David is righteous. The Lord tests the righteous and the wicked, and he who loves violence, his soul will hate. The Lord tests the righteous. The Lord sees the righteous. He's aware of them. In verse 7, David is righteous. This is his category. For I am, basically he's saying, I fit in this category. I'm aligned with God. And see, we know about David. David is faithful, but he's not boastful. He has evidence and experience, faith in God. He stood against the lion and against the bear as he was a shepherd boy, a teenager, and withstood them. He was experienced. When he went against Goliath, it wasn't no, this we think of it, and we do it properly. He was a young man, and we had a field full of mighty warriors who was scared to death of Goliath, and here comes this little kid, teenager. This teenager wasn't just any teenager. He lived with the sheep. God had already been with him, and he conquered and killed a bear and a lion within himself with God's help. This wasn't blind faith. This was experienced faith. David knew God. David knew what God was capable of. That was what his faith was founded on. He was evidence and experience. He was justified and not sinless. This is huge with David. Because we paint this world, well, what about the wicked? We could throw everybody in that category. The idea of wicked is not just one who does something wrong. Because of all people, David does the most hideous things, right? He stole a man's wife. She was pregnant from that situation. And then he killed her husband. There's no other way to frame that. He killed him. He's a murderer. And an adulterer. And he stole this guy's wife. He was not sinless. David always returned back to God. His foundation was God. His foundation was, his trust was in God, even though he failed, even though he missed the mark. He does some hideous things in his life. It wasn't about those things. He stood justified because he come back to God and God forgave him of those things. That's the difference in the wicked that we're talking about with the fire and brimstone and the snares. That's the difference in one who experiences those things versus David. It wasn't that there was any just means as far as the wicked, and David committed similar sins. It wasn't about the sin that was committed, it was about how they responded to that sin. The one who turns his face against God and says, I don't care, I don't want your guidance, I don't want your help, they're going to get the judgment. David turned to God and said, forgive me. I'll do better. And that was our example of David. He is justified. He is not sinless. But he's been justified as if he had not sinned because of his relationship with God, because of what he did in response to his transgressions. He was tried but not consumed. The idea that, yes, the enemy was in battle position. He had been tried many times throughout his life. He survived them all. And many, many times it was God who carried him through. Mike could say it was always God that carried him through. But he put his trust in God. Why should I flee the mountain? Why should I flee? What should I be scared of? I got God on my side. And yeah, occasionally he forgot. Or he had a weak moment. And he would flee the mountains, right? And that's something we all would deal with. So David put his trust in God. We so many psalms we could go back and look at. Psalm 23, the one we all know, the Lord is my shepherd. He is overseeing me, making sure I have proper food and nutrition, water, the shelter, all those things in the physical farming sense. David knew God was always with him and helping him. The Lord is my shepherd. The Lord is my rock. The Lord is my fortress. Why should I flee? And remember, in God's nature, he reigns from heaven, he condemns the wicked, he blesses the righteous. That is the nature of God. That is who we serve. That is who David served. He is not of this world. And he respects the righteous. He respects the just and the justified. But he does also condemn the wicked. The wicked have no standing before him. None of us really have any standing except we come to him and ask for his help. And he gives it. That's the conditions that he gives to us, to those. So foundations will fail. As we sit around and as we live our lives here, things happen. Our health's going to fail. We're going to get sick. What are we going to do? Who do you trust in? Where's your faith? We may suffer all kinds of financial hardships. And in our world, we have so many security systems, so many safety nets for us. You know, until recent 100 years, people could have money in the bank and it'd be gone tomorrow. We don't have that risk today. But the reality is, there's none of this is safe in reality. God is over all of it. There's things that could happen to us we can't even conceive of today. We may put our trust in our finances, but at the end of the day, it's not ours, and it may not last. The FDIC may, you know, whatever, who knows? We can't conceive of what could happen. The ruling governments will fail. One of these days, if our nation's here long enough, it will fall. Everyone before us has. What nations there exist today that hasn't fallen? Right? There's not. Our family? Trials are going to come. The reality is we are mortal. We are physical. We are not eternal beings as we live upon this land. Everything we see and experience is temporary. Is that what we put our faith in? Is that what we put our trust in? Well, we see that, no, that's not going to work, is it? None of that will endure. None of it will endure. So, having our faith and trust in God, he is the one who we can put our faith and trust in. He loves the righteous. We should be faithful, not boastful. We can experience and evidence faith in our life and God's help in our lives. We can see those things. We're justified. We're not sinless. It's not like we have never sinned. It's not like we stand before God and say, hey, you ain't got nothing on me. No, we can't. None of us stand there. He's got something on us. hopefully we've done the things, that are, or the intention is, our goal is to do the things necessary to make sure we're standing right with God, that we're not his adversary, we're not at enmity with him, we're not enemies with him, that we are justified and aligned with him. We can be tried and tested in this world. All those previous things can fail. We're not going to be consumed. We won't be. God is an ally to the righteous. God loves righteousness, and the just will see his face there in verse 7. The upright, the New American Standard says, will see his face. So trust in God. Put your trust in God. Be faithful to God. Our God's blessings upon us are not independent of our situation in life. It's not independent of how we act and react. He leaves the choice up to us. The way it's prepared, we talked about lesson recently about our redemption. We've been redeemed. We've been ransomed already. Jesus did that. We've been reconciled. As Christians, we are reconciled back to God. We're put back in a right relationship with God. You know, God didn't have anything to fix. We're the ones that had something to fix. And so the way has been prepared, a way of reconciliation, a way of redemption, the other word for redemption I just used, it just left my mind, ransom. We've been ransomed. A way has been prepared. And ultimately, God has designed us for a purpose. God has designed us for a purpose. We're not here just to live and enjoy the pleasures of the world and live it up, as they say. He's designed us to live a virtuous life according to his judgment, according to his ways. And that is life at its best. It's not living in some great mansion with servants and all these things, with lots of money. That's not life at its best. Life at its best is living as God has designed us to live. And that's the best we can get here. As difficult and as challenging it may be, that's still the best it'll get. It'll be good. This is not going to be heaven, though. He did not promise us heaven on earth. He did not promise us heaven on earth. So, trust in God. Why should I flee? Why should I be scared? Why should I be worried? He will overcome. Are you in the category of one that can say that, hey, I've done what God has said. I'm obedient to him. I come before him and ask forgiveness of my sins. Are you in that category? One of the things that was required in Acts 2:38 is all of you Jews who have just crucified your Messiah, you repent of what you've done and be baptized, and your sins will be washed away. And you will become a Christian. You'll become a disciple of Jesus. You'll become a follower of Jesus. You'll be given blessings. You'll be adopted as a child of God. Without that, we're outside of God's care. Without that, God still sees us. But if we've not done what he's asked of us, we've not been put into that realm of his care. We're not in a place where we're reconciled to him. We've not been redeemed yet. If we've not done those things, we need to do those things. And if you have and you stumble along the way, we're not secured forever. We have a life to live. We have growth and development to do. And he's given us this time here to do that. It's a proving ground, if you will, to develop ourselves, to put on those righteous virtues he's called for us. And maybe you've gone awry in that way that you wish to have help of us. We want you to know today we'll be willing to help you and pray for you in any way that we can. So if you're subject to our gospel call this morning, won't you come while Mark sings our song of encouragement?